Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads.
You boys like Mexico?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore.
Hey, welcome back. Taxation is theft, of course. I'm Dan Taxation is Theft Berman. And everyone asks me, is that really my legal middle name? Did I get it changed? And the answer is no, because free people don't ask the government for permission. So my name is lawfully changed, but it's not legally with the government's permission. Of course, if they ever catch me, that's what they're going to call me, because I won't respond to the other name that they have on record for me. Taxation is Theft, the podcast, is available on taxationistheft.info. You can also check us out on youtube.com/taxationistheft. And tonight we have a really awesome guest who is up planning some, I like to say some mischief, but it's really some good work that we all need to be taking care of. Matthew Short, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me on, man. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good. So it sounds like you've got an awesome event set up this weekend, and you're kind of it's interesting. You have like this cool little play on what the French have been doing over the past few weeks, which is the yellow vests, and they started their thing out with a guillotine. So why don't you tell me about your event and what's going into that?
Yeah, what's awesome is that the French have been standing up to taxation. That's been one of the main things, right? And the only thing that's like they have a problem with there is they don't have firearms anymore. So they've been using sticks and rocks to try and take back after they've been stolen from, because we all know taxation is theft. So, you know, we want to make sure in solidarity with people like in France that we're going to have a Sons of Freedom march in Dallas, Texas this weekend on Saturday. And we're going to march a guillotine while open carrying down to the federal courthouse.
Awesome. So this is something that I've been finding really interesting, because the purpose of a guillotine is obviously to remove somebody's head. And it's interesting that we've come to a time where it's kind of like, The government used to be afraid of us, and that's why they didn't do things that they knew we would hate. Or, you know, I don't want to say used to as in that's the way it just always was. Of course, there were always tyrants trying to push us around. But as long as they felt in fear, and when the people would come back around and remind them to be afraid, then we'd have that. But now we're kind of like in a place where it's like, oh, well, if you bring a guillotine up and stick it in front, that's a threat. You're actually threatening to hurt somebody, and that's a criminal act. So I think this is really interesting, because at the same time, it's like, yeah, but if you don't do that, they're literally threatening you every single day to stick you in a steel cage and hurt you if you resist, for defending yourself from another criminal, for trying to protect your property from them stealing it from you. So it's really kind of an interesting position that we're in. What do you think about that?
I think it's really interesting that for 6 years, people have been telling us that a lot of the things we've been doing has been offensive. But how many of us sit around talking on the interwebs these days like this, discussing about how they keep stealing from us and they keep doing this and that to us? And about 6 years ago, some of us decided, you know what, we're going to start walking in the streets with our guns. We're going to call it open carry, and we're going to petition our overlords down in Austin to do that. It's turned into a movement that's really spread across other states. Other states have changed their laws with this, with the things that we've been doing. And so, you know, in the realm of somebody like Thomas Paine, who said, those who do not offend cannot be truthful, I have to say that I can't own up to other people's feelings. nor can the rest of the group of the people that I'm with and help represent all the time. But what we can do is we can stand up for rights of the individual and talk about those. I mean, you're allowed to talk about how you're offended, but at the same time, because you're offended, you're not allowed to come down upon our rights. And that's why we live by the NAP.
Right. So, yeah, that's really interesting. It seems to be that, you know, it's really like a double standard. It's, of course, there's always, it's okay to do something wrong as long as it's something wrong that I believe in, which is, you know, that's how most people see it. And, you know, to there are a lot of people out there who think, oh, yeah, but if we take guns away, then we're going to save the children somehow. So to them, it's somehow justified in like, oh, yeah, well, let's just take all the guns away. And anybody who resists is some crazy militant nutcase who doesn't deserve to have a gun. It's really crazy. And at the same time, these are the same people who are saying, well, yeah, only the police should have guns. And they still, those are the same people who hate the police for going around and shooting the unarmed civilians. So it's really like, there's like this weird mix of emotions that's going on in people's head. And I don't think they've been able to like consolidate them and say, wait, this doesn't add up. It's pretty crazy. So what do you have planned for this event? So you're going to march there, you're going to open carry, you're going to bring the guillotine. About how many people do you expect to show up, and what do you intend to accomplish while you're there?
I think right now we have about 70 people, lined up to show up. Of course, anytime you throw an event like this, you're going to guarantee some people are going to not be able to show up to the revolution. You know, got to get their hair, their nails done that day or whatever. But we're going to meet on the west side of the Trinity River, where they have a bridge they've turned into like a park and a walkway. And we're going to unload there, unload the equipment there from the vehicles to a staging area. And then we're going to walk the guillotine across the bridge. It's probably about a mile to a mile and a half across the Trinity River. And this is, you know, Americans, they march things across rivers at Christmas time and go and, you know, prove a point to other people that we're not afraid to do it. And we're going to take it down in front of the Frank Crowley Courthouse, and we're going to set up and we're going to have speakers, and we might even demonstrate the guillotine that we are going to bring down to the courthouse. This isn't a direct threat to anybody that's there, but it is a way for us to raise awareness to the fact that, hey, as much as all of us talk about these things on the interwebs and we go to libertarian conferences and we play make-believe and trying to set up rules and things, these people are still getting away every day with caging free human beings for doing things that are victimless. You know, if you don't damage other people's property and you don't harm somebody else, then the state should have no place in putting you in private prisons and making business off of slaving our people.
Right. Now, I mean, I at least have the thoughts going through my head, and I know there are other people who are saying, oh, this is going to be a waste of time, because if you're not actually going to threaten anybody, what's the point of having the guillotine there? And of course, I don't want you to say anything that's going to get you into trouble either. But, you know, what's the, I guess it's like, what if it's one of these things where, so the government is supposed to fear us. That's why we're armed, right? It's necessary to keep a free state for us to be armed. And if everybody in the country who was armed came into this mentality of, okay, we're armed, but under no circumstances, ever, 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 never, no circumstances do we ever point these weapons at anybody who works for the government, how would the government ever fear us? What would kind of be the point of that? So now at the same time, I don't want to say we should be threatening them, because then of course they're gonna come after us, they're gonna make an example of us. But do you think that there's like some do you think that there's some way to demonstrate you know, that we are willing to protect ourselves in order to kind of, I don't want to say make them afraid, because now that's the requirements for an assault, right? Is to make somebody afraid. What can we actually do more than just like saying, hey, we have the tools, to make them kind of, you know, back down and say, okay, we are your servants, and we're going to stop threatening you the way that we don't want to be threatened either.
Well, let's call it an artistic demonstration.
All right.
We actually have built a guillotine. The blade was fabricated yesterday for us by a metal shop in Dallas that supports the message. And we were like, hey, you guys got a blade? And they're like, we will make you one.
Nice.
And so the thing is here is, believe it or not, the people really have our voice. That's why politics have been changing in our country in the last couple of years. That's why people like you and I have gotten popular in our messages talking about how taxation is theft. People are waking up from this and they're going, oh, wait, yes, we've been getting screwed left and right, you know? And so even in an artistic demonstration, whether it was us carrying rifles in the street over the last 6 years, or whether it's taking a guillotine down there, we have actually seen over these 6 years, the police departments in Texas start to learn the law that they didn't even know in the first place. And when you talk about pointing weapons at people and government stuff, now you're talking about calculated to cause alarm. That's a law. You can't just go and point a weapon at somebody.
Right.
But, you know, you even in the principles of the non-aggression principle, you have the right to be so defensive that you bring down the hammer of God on somebody that's violent.
Right. So, yeah, so maybe it is just that we need more people awake and we need more people to understand what's actually going on so that they'll I guess we'll have more people on our side. And you know, maybe that's what it is. When the scales start to tip, that the government says, well, hey, it looks like most of the population is no longer on our side. They're now with these other people who are dissenting from our governing rule. Maybe that is when they're going to say, okay, they're armed. They haven't threatened us, but they're armed. And now there are a lot more of them than there were before. That's scary, because maybe that's when they see, oh, something might just set them off one day and they're going to go crazy, kind of like what happened in Paris. They weren't threatening. I don't know exactly if they were threatening weeks up or months up before, but basically it all kind of just crashed down at once and they just all got it. There were no threats. They just kind of got out there and started throwing. I mean, maybe the threats were when they were, you know, dumping the manure on the parliament. But yeah, so that's really interesting. So with that in mind, I would actually encourage people, you know, even if you don't want to open carry, just show up and support and stand there. Because really, I'm just thinking, like, if I were in the Capitol building and I saw, like, all these people march up, even if only a few of them were armed, but there were hundreds of them, I think that would be pretty scary in itself. And like, hey, okay, you guys are in charge. I get it.
I think that's why you see a lot of great activists in Texas. We've actually had the state police at the Capitol in Austin tell us, thank you for being nice and peaceful because you guys had us out armed today. And I think that's really what allowed them to start looking at the law and being like, haha, you arrested one of us, but now we're going to get case law on you because you violated the law this time. We've actually been toting the line probably more so than the state and the police are by the agreements even of our legislature that has argued over and over to define what a civilized society is supposed to be. But when we continue to see criminals, even in the state level, argue to steal more of our money and to cage more of our people and to continue down this road that has really brought us to a place of why we're even having these conversations is another thing. You know, you were talking about raising awareness and people seeing it out and everything. That's why I think the yellow vest is a great idea. Because if you see us out there armed and doing these things, we're doing official freedom business, okay? Because, you know, officials always wear their vest and everything.
Right.
I've had people argue with me that we shouldn't be seen by other people, that we should, like, quietly in the shadows take care of these things. But we've been doing that for over a decade on the internet in different sites and different chat zones and everything, organizing people for over a decade. Not just us, but many other groups across the nation, probably people that you've spoken to on your show before. And at some point in time, you got to go, hey, the French actually had a good idea for once. Like they went out there and we, man, I've seen them do color revolutions in places like Iran and Iraq and Syria when they were leading into the different wars that they had. But what I like about not being a paid group of activists, not being Soros-funded like the BLM or Antifa or other people, is that we as free individuals, understanding the non-aggression principle and being in control of our own lives and our own destination, being voluntarists, that we can be the wild card. And I think that's what's been great about America for many, many years, and that we can continue to do is be individuals and not play into either side. Both sides are trying to argue it one side or the other, and they're leaving this narrative of freedom right in between for us to take.
Right. And I think, you know, what you said about, you know, coming out and being out in the daylight and wearing something identifying, I think that's also really important for, you know, for a couple of reasons. One, for a feeling of togetherness, you're feeling connected with everybody, but also because you're, you know, I know, like, I used to be out there thinking I was just crazy because I thought taxation was theft. And like, and then I started to realize, no, other people are actually like fighting that. And it's the same in, you know, every movement. There are always people who are, they're too afraid to say anything because they think that everyone's going to look down on them and call them crazy because they're alone and there's nobody else that's thinking, you know, hey, we should have the right to do this, or this is something that's going on in the world that's wrong. And you know, when everybody comes out together and you're all wearing something that identifies you together, I think that's really, really powerful to bring out more people that are like, hey, these are the people I've been looking for who really support, you know, my idea of something that the way things should be. So now I want to get out and join them. And that's where you kind of like start growing momentum and just a lot of people, you know, it can grow really fast that way. So again, if you're, you know, if you're interested in this, this is going to be in Austin, right?
This is going to be in Dallas.
Oh, in Dallas. Okay. So, if you're near Dallas, if you're in any of the small cities outside around Dallas, do whatever you can to get down there and show some support. Even if it's just to, like, if you don't want to get involved, you want to watch from a distance, you want to stand around and take some pictures, do it, because it's, for one, it's going to be a really awesome experience. Just to see this kind of stuff, you're going to have some great speakers there that are going to be saying some very important things, I'm sure. And so if you haven't been to one of these things before, you definitely want to get out there and check it out. Just, if anything, just for the experience. But hey, you might find yourself, you know, joining the group and saying like, hey, yeah, I really believe in this fight and I think we should do more.
We're going to have some great volunteer speakers there. Also, you know, we're making this a public event. Obviously, if we were going to hunt the government down this week and chop their heads off, we probably wouldn't be making a big event out of it or whatever. You know, there'd probably be other plans going on. But this is definitely one of those things where we can give a visual effect to the way that people are feeling. And yes, when you see people out there, friends, I've made so many amazing freedom-loving friends in this movement over the last 10, 15 years. But our speakers are going to be Patrick Smith. He ran for not governor of the Libertarian Party this last year. Luis Mises. He is an amazing, amazing guy. Is involved with our group and Don't Comply. Roger Roots. He is a lawyer with jury nullification, which I think is a really great plan. You as an individual can hang a jury and send somebody home that didn't hurt anybody. That's the true power in American law. And then Bob Smiley, who's in charge of FEJA with jury rights, I believe in North Texas or even in Texas. And then Murdoch Pizzgatti, the founder of Don'tComply.com, is going to be the final speaker on that day. And we would love for people to come down there and march with us in solidarity of the message of, you know, the non-aggression principle. And that's why we're saying the Sons of Freedom, because it's self-owned and non-aggression principle strong.
Awesome. So if somebody does want to come out and they want to get one of those cool vests, I see it looks like you got them customized there with your logos.
I tell you what, I'm at home right now in the Ozark Mountains, and my mom just did this for me. She's one of the greatest ladies I've ever known. Can you believe she encourages this amazingness?
That's awesome. You know, it's funny. Like, I've found that there are from, you know, generations before us, like people who are a little bit older, our parents, our grandparents, I found that they're actually, it's still a minority, but I found that there are some really cool people in those groups that are very willing to support this cause, because they've lived in times where, you know, our government has constantly been getting bigger for like the past 100, 200 years. Like, it started small and it just always gets bigger. And so they've lived when it was smaller. And you know, if things keep going the way they're going, hopefully they don't, we're going to be like the weird ones to our kids. Like, can you believe that our parents actually fought for this stuff? Because it's true. It's like, I think, you know, when you just grow up with government so big, you just kind of get used to it, and it seems weird to fight it, because it's like, but it's always been there. But no, it hasn't. Just years before you were born, things were better than they were, you know, just after. But awesome.
Yeah, that's why I like the government, right? Because it's this magical thing that people believe in. But gubermente in Latin, I'm probably saying that wrong, gubermente literally means to control the mind. So what's happening is all these groups of people are controlled in their mind that they want to take care of other people in such a way that they get to tell you what to do in your life. But
right.
The greatest thing about that is if we all realize that these are the people who live down the street for you. They work in buildings next to you. They're in the street every day with you. And so when you hold yourself even to be good people and people who argue the best points and all of these things, and then you give a reason to see you out in the open doing the things that we should be when people are robbing from us, stealing from us, caging us, then they go, oh, there is people around us that don't agree with us. It's like a cult, man. The state is a religion. And then these people believe in it so much so they're going to control our lives down through there. And what you were saying about the generations before us, maybe in this generation we can break that they weren't able to do in the generation before us, so that our children don't have to see it. Maybe I will commit war so that my children can study art.
That would be awesome. And yeah, that's ultimately always the goal is, you know, to make things better for our future generations. And it's unfortunate that some people think that more government is going to do that. Of course we know it won't. So okay, awesome. So let's talk about some of your organizations, because you've got Come and Take It Texas, and you've also got the Don't Comply. Let's talk about those. Where I guess Come and Take It is the organization that's doing the guillotine, right?
Don't Comply is the organization that's doing the guillotine, and sometimes they're one and the same. Sometimes they're not. The organization was originally don'tcomply.com that Murdoch Pisgotti and a few of his brothers founded and were activists. And then around 2013 started the open carry movement with the name Come and Take It America, Come and Take It Texas, and started the first big open carry march was at Temple, Texas, when we surrounded the police station there. And that led into planning the Alamo March and building guns on the steps of the Capitol. And we've defended the trails in Dallas when they tried to disarm the people in Dallas from rapists and people who chop up people on the trails there. And once we got done with some of the legislation and some groups broke off from that, we started hitting other rights other than just gun rights. And we do that under the name of Don't Comply, because we don't want to comply to immoral laws and laws that are ridiculously thieving from the public. And I'll tell you, I'm one of those people that I live outside the system as much as possible, and I don't comply to the laws that I believe are very immoral and robbing my people and enslaving them. I think that's pretty harsh language, but when you really break it down through all the arguments, that's how I really feel about it.
Yeah, I think it is. You know, like we said, how when you're born into that system, that's just the way things are. But it's like, you know, when you want to go work for somebody and they say, okay, but you got to give 20% of it to us. Like when that's all you know, then okay, yeah, it's just the way things are. But it's like when you take a step back and look at it from the outside, it's like, wait a minute, what did you do for that 20%? And they'll say, oh, well, we did all these things for you. And it's like, yeah, but did you really? You know, like you, okay, yeah, you gave me police departments, but they haven't been protecting me. They've been extorting me whenever I drive around. They try to take more money from me. You know, there's when I actually do get robbed, I call the police, and there's pretty much a 0% chance that they're ever going to get anything back that was stolen from me. If someone breaks into my house and they're threatening me, they're usually gone before the cops get there. So what have they actually done to protect me? You know, they come up with all these things and say, like, yeah, we've given you all these great things. And it's like, yeah, they're not that great. But I guess, of course, it's easy for them to say, you know, well, did you get murdered last month? Well, that was because of our police. If our police weren't there, you would have been murdered. It's easy for them to say that because you can't prove, you can't disprove a negative, right?
Right.
So, yeah, it's quite an interesting scam they've got going on, but it's, you know, when you take a step back and kind of look at everything, you can, it's a little bit easier to see, like, hey, wait a minute, maybe this isn't right. And I think that's probably the most difficult time that I've had with people is, you know, trying to spread this message, in general, is just that, like, you know, they're too attached to kind of what they have to take that step back and say, well, what if we didn't have that? Do we really need that? Like, they're, you know, I guess trying to throw someone in the water because they think they can't swim. But, you know, just throw them in and they'll start swimming. Maybe that's what it is.
Well, you said 100 years ago, you know, things started changing for American people, and they did. Back in 1913, they started the Federal Reserve without right. people's permission. The next year or two, they said, we're going to give you Social Security numbers and start taxing you. Right. And what they've done is they took us off the gold standard. They put a number on your body, and they make money off of your literal sweat and blood, not off of gold, not off of resources, off of our sweat and blood. And then it turns into corporate law, where these city centers and everything, they've got these corporate police departments, don't even follow constitutional law. If you even want to argue with that, I think it's one of the best places to start.
Right.
And they're answering to a body of like 6 or 7 people instead of the body of the people. And that's all been brought down through that banking system, where they've started robbing our country since before you and I were born. And they literally are trading in the souls of men and using their number to do so while creating their own force to make sure that we're doing the little things that they want us to do. And it's ridiculous when you stand back and you look at the whole game for what it is, because you can still be moral. You can still take care of people. You can still not do things to violate other people's property or, you know, their physical stature or anything. And what does it matter to the other people if you're not harming them? Instead, they have this idea. And I think it was C.S. Lewis that said that one of the worst tyrannies is the person who does it from a moralistic standpoint, because their cupidity would never sleep, and they would continuously 24 hours a day rule you because they believe that it's correct and it's right.
Right. Yeah. And what's, I think, you know, with morality, it's never so black and white. I mean, there's, you know, there's always a situation of, if you do nothing, someone's going to get hurt. If you do something, someone else is going to get hurt. And it's, there's, you know, I get the point, you know, that we can say, well, hey, if we have a society of laws, maybe we can protect some people, and we can keep some people from getting hurt, and we can prevent some loss. But the reality is, even with that noble cause in the beginning, it always grows into, you know, like, yeah, okay, we don't want people to be murdered. That's a pretty noble cause. But then it turns into, oh, well, people are being murdered over gambling debts, so we should outlaw gambling. And it just turns into, like, you know, well, hey, why don't we outlaw breathing? Because every single person who's ever murdered someone was breathing at the time. Like, it just, you know, they kind of take things too far, and it's easy for them to do it just because that's what we get used to.
Let's take that argument to the extreme. You know, this person smokes some crack, and then they went and raped somebody and stole their mama's things so they get another crack rock, continue smoking crack, right? But what about all the people in government and all the people in Hollywood and other places that smoke crack and never really steal from anybody or rape anybody, and you never know about it because they're not doing that? Well, let's take it to the other extreme of the gun debate, where you have a shooting in a place like Pittsburgh in a synagogue, and the police can't show up for 9 minutes, but now they want to outlaw guns throughout the city and then expand that to the other cities because that one person did something bad. To both extremes, the person who committed the crime is the individual who should pay for violating the NAP, who violated that non-aggression principle. Whether you're high or you're drunk or you're insane, none of those things are excuses for hurting other people and for damaging somebody else's life or property. So that's the argument they give. And then you can't punish the entirety of the people because of one man's actions. When you do, you create a society of victims and criminals that were never criminals or victims before.
Right. Yeah, and to go further in your example of you know, somebody who's smoking crack and stealing, I've actually used this example with a cop who was trying to, you know, give me the sob story about how he just arrested someone. It was meth. He just arrested someone for breaking into someone's house so he could sell it and get some money to go smoke some meth. My response to that was, okay, well, you caught him, right? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, okay, and you sent him to jail for breaking and entering, right? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, so what does it matter if he was on drugs or not? That might have been his motivation, but it's irrelevant. He might have been stealing to get some money to buy some, you know, to take his girlfriend on a nice date. Like, should we outlaw dating because of that? Like, someone's motivation is not the cause of the criminality. That's just kind of like, that's kind of maybe the tipping point of you know, of what puts them there. The criminality is not, you know, hey, I need some money so I can do something. The criminality is how you decide to get that money. And we need to realize that, because that's, I think, like, those two things, like, it works so many times, like, you know, with the gun argument, with outlawing guns, they take the motivation or an access to a weapon in this case, and they combine it with a criminal act, and they say, well, these two things always happen together, so if we get rid of one, the other one's just going to magically disappear. But the reality is they're not connected at all. They're so loosely that it's like, you get rid of one, it's not. There was, in China, guns are illegal, and there was like I don't know how often they have like a stabbing spree where some guy gets a knife and he just goes around, and they don't catch him because you can't hear where it's not like gunshots where you can be, oh, the stab came from over here. So, you know, the police might be running around and he might stab somebody, might hear a scream or something, but by the time the police get over there and see where it's coming from, then the guy's gone and stabbing someone else. It's insane. They're so different. We have to be able to keep that distinction. I think it's really important. But that's an educational problem, and of course, government controls. They control the education of the mind, which is another problem in itself.
Governmente. It's yeah. Governmente. It's the control of the mind. Yeah.
Exactly.
No, the mayor of Pittsburgh recently has made the argument that the one contributing factor in firearm murders is firearms. And I want to say, well, no, I don't know if I can cuss on your show.
Yeah, go for it.
No shit, Sherlock, right? Like, the main contributor in stabbings is knives, and the main contributor in car wrecks is cars. But the other main contributor in all of those scenarios is the individual controlling the tool with the intent to harm somebody else.
The criminal.
I mean, you can argue it so many different ways, but they single in on these different points. And, you know, in England, where guns are already outlawed, people don't have that. They're having knife stabbing epidemics, and now they want people to turn in their knives. And they've got big bins where they, you know, the cops are buying knives off of people, just like they're trying to buy guns off of people here in the United States. It's the intent. And, you know, I think that what shows like this do And events like we're trying to plan is, it's education, but we're going to the extremes of doing these things to make the arguments with people that, hey, you know, they keep dragging us down this road, and it's insanity. We keep doing the same things over and over. We're punishing people who aren't doing anything wrong instead of punishing the people who are doing things wrong, you know, and instead of actually taking care of the problems, we're like, oh, let's fund more government. Let's tax people more. And that way we can control what happens. Yeah, because it worked for the drug war, didn't it? Right. It worked for so many different issues, hasn't it? I mean, putting police on the streets and being pirates and pulling people over has worked and kept people from speeding, hasn't it? You know, that's the argument that we have to give back. And until people really understand that, then they're ruling their lives by fear. And they're so afraid in that misunderstanding, because that's what's being taught to the public, that they just are like, here, I give my cares to you so that you can take care of this for me, Mr. Government, Mr. Controller of the Mind, who's making money off of and getting rich and all of that off of stealing from the people.
Right. And what's also really fascinating is there's kind of a supply and demand aspect to that. Like there's another school shooting, and you have concerned citizens who, I mean, and understandably, they want something to be done. Like, oh my God, this is a tragedy. This shouldn't be happening in our society. I can agree with them on that. But they always go, like, it's never like, what can we do to fix the problem? How can we change society? It's always, when is the government going to do something? And so you have these people in government, or these people who want to get elected, and they want their popularity contest that they're running. Oh, I know how to fix it. And they just come up with the dumbest thing they can think of, which is like, oh, we'll just ban all the guns. That'll work, because if they don't have the guns, they can't shoot. And it's like the argument kind of ends there for most people, right? Because the other side of that is, well, the crime part was the criminal. We can't get rid of the criminals. That's like, how are you going to ban criminals? Like, I'm pretty sure they already have laws against being a criminal. And apparently it doesn't work. So I think it's kind of like, there is like a supply and demand, and maybe the responsibility of this problem that we're in lies on the, I don't want to call them the uneducated voter or the uneducated citizen, but maybe the, I don't know what you would call them. They're just maybe uneducated in the way of how politics and society works, where they're just like, hey, government, we're paying these people, fix the problem. Which, I mean, I guess that's, you know, what am I paying you for? That's kind of a sound argument in one way, but it's kind of like, at what point are we going to say, wait, we've been paying you and you're not fixing these problems. Let's stop paying you. Maybe that's what we need to change the conversation to.
I mean, a lot of people can look that stuff up when you start looking into the CAFRs and where they're hiding money for these little corporate agencies that they're carrying. And you can get a real good idea of what kind of money they're wasting. They're just, man, they're robbing us blind. But one of the latest things I saw said you're paying more in taxes now than you do for gasoline throughout the year that gets you everywhere. You're paying more for taxes than the food you eat every year now. If you crunch the numbers down to what it is exactly, which means we're taking our blood and sweat and paying into whatever. I mean, $40,000 toilet seats. Have you ever taken a dump on a $40,000 toilet seat?
Must be nice.
I haven't.
Yeah, it's so insane. And like I get it. Like, you know, government looks big. It looks like it's a big operation. It must be expensive to operate. They have so many employees. I can get how someone could say like, well, yeah, I guess we should pay a lot in taxes, but it's like, no, most of that money's wasted. Most of the things that they do aren't helping you. They've got, you know, your congressmen are getting paid 200 grand and up with, like, once they serve like a couple of terms, they get that for life. So after they retire, on top of that, you're paying for all of their expenses while they're like flying in and out of the country to like their vacation homes and all this other crap. And then do this. Go to a courthouse, especially one of the newer ones, and look how they're built. Man, when I was living in Los Angeles, I went to a court that was like, it was one of the newest courts, because a lot of even the older courts are like marble everywhere, but this newest court was like, it was like 10 stories tall, all made out of glass, marble everywhere, these like oak benches like for everybody to sit on, which are like super uncomfortable. Like, I mean, cheaper, like the cheap little movie theater seats would have been nicer. But it's like they spend so much money, and it's like they're rebuilding the Roman Empire with like these offices that they work in, just to like say like, oh my God, look how big and magnificent we are. Look at the way they build these places. It's insane. And that's so much money that they're dumping into that. And it's like, you know how like it's hard for you to kind of make ends meet sometimes, like your car breaks down and where are you going to get the money for it? Well, if you didn't just give half of your paycheck away to the government, that wouldn't be as big of a problem for you. You'd actually have more money. Like, you'd be able to solve right. your own problems.
Even with insurance, if you put away 30% of your money, you know, into some sort of account, or you saved it in gold or whatever, by the time you were retired, you'd have more money. By the time you got hurt, you'd probably have more money than you're even allowed to have back from them. That's how they make tons and tons of money. But the reason you're not comfortable in those courts is because you're not supposed to be comfortable on a pirate ship, sir. It's admiralty law. That's why there's gold fringe around that flag, and that's why the captain of the ship wears a black dress.
Yeah, so that's like, and now we're getting into conspiracy theory territory. like I remember, like the first time I heard about that stuff, I was like, this sounds really insane. But I like, just who I am, I kind of tested it because I was always getting traffic tickets, and I was like, I'm gonna test this stuff anyway. That like that whole court system really is smoke and mirrors. It's like this. Like there's a scene on that movie Big Daddy with Adam Sandler where like this kid's playing some stupid card. It's not even poker. They're just playing some like, oh, I got some cards, and then he's playing it with this other guy. What's his name? Rob Schneider. And this little kid, he's like, I win. And Rob Schneider's like, what do you mean? I had those same cards. How are you winning? And he's like, because I win. What's his game called? It's called I Win. And it's like, that's literally like when you go into the courts, it's like, that's the game you're playing. They wrote all the rules. They made them really confusing so that when they tell them to you, you're like, oh, well, I guess I kind of understand that. And this is the system that society voted for. So I guess the rest of the country is against me on this one. That's how they make you feel. But the reality is it's like half of it's just made up shit that like you don't understand it because it really doesn't make any sense. Like there's no logical, like it makes sense. It can make sense if you dig into the rules, but there's the reason behind it doesn't have any practical reason behind it. They're not trying to take criminal, immoral people and put them away or punish them by taking their money. They're trying to find as many excuses as they can to extort you for your labor and your money and your property. It's insane. Yeah.
I've gotten so many different traffic tickets where if you really want to find out how to fight the law in the courtroom, traffic tickets are one of the best ways to do it. Because if you're already getting screwed for $300,
right,
you might as well have fun with them, right? I go in there, I plead not guilty. I make sure that cop that pulled me over has to take time out of his day and he has to come down there. And if I get a chance to, I'm going to put him on the stand. I'm going to ask him some questions too. This is where they rule us by fear and by words. They use the right words. They try to get you to incriminate yourself. They try to get you to say something that breaks the law in their name, you know, in their system. And that is the system that they convince people to go through. I've sat so many times down there while getting ready to fight a ticket, and I just watch a line of people just shelling out money to them, like, oh, I don't have time for this, I'm going home. You know, if like 10%, something that Murdoch and I say all the time, we're doing the minimal that we believe other people should be doing if they're slightly awake, because the more people who actually step to them go, wait a second, hold on, you stopped me in the middle of my day like a pirate on the side of the road, you want me to come to the ship and pay you booty, but I have booty to give you. So we're going to have to argue about this in court, and we're going to have to waste your time. And the more you can call for a jury trial on the simplest of tickets if they're charging you money for it, because it's criminal court. So you have to, it's the duty of the state to prove that you're wrong. Waste their time. I think everybody should be wasting their time, even if we're wasting their time right now by hauling a guillotine down to the courthouse and letting them see that, hey, some of us are awake and we're doing this. You know, at some point in time, you have to understand that the right of the people to bear their arms literally means to use your arms, because if your arms are put together, you're in slavery. If you have chains on you, you're in slavery. So to bear your arms literally gives you the ability to use a tool of your choice, whether it be a firearm or whether it be a plowshare. It just depends on how the other people around you are working that, you know. But they use words. They use mind poems. I don't know how to explain that to you. And those words confuse the people. And then we give them our acceptance. We give them are okay to do it under contractual law, and they got you. So people need to start saying, no, we're not going to comply. Don't comply.
I've seen, like, I know exactly what you're talking about. Like, I've seen people, here's an example. This guy was, I just went to court just to observe, and they gave me a hard time to get in because I didn't have a ticket. But I watched this guy, he was just there to, like, you know, he believed in his mind he didn't come to a complete stop. And, you know, the prosecutor's like, well, we have a video. Do you want to watch it before the trial? And he was like, no, because I know I stopped. Right now, the video showed he didn't stop. It was a rolling stop, which, in my opinion, fuck, that's still no reason to extort him. But anyway, he had an opportunity to change his plea to guilty and take a lesser fine by not going through the trial process, which is another thing that you're supposed to have a right to a trial. You're not supposed to have to buy it by paying an extra fine. Right. And so this guy was just like, he didn't understand the difference. And it was clear by the look on his face. He didn't understand. The prosecutor had to explain it to him three times. He doesn't have a lawyer. The prosecutor never offered to give him a lawyer. And so he's like, okay, well, this is your last chance. If you want to see the tape now, you have to tell me. And he was like, no. And so the prosecutor goes away. And I told the guy, hey, look, you really should see the video now, because what he's telling you is, if the video does show that you rolled it, you're going to have to pay more money because you said not guilty instead of, you know, so you should, like, it doesn't matter what you think. Even if it proves that you did stop, waste his time and make him show it to you now. And so that at least, you know, so he missed that opportunity, but at least when the trial started, he was able to tell the judge, hey, I'm sorry, I really didn't understand what the prosecutor, and of course this wasn't a judge, this was an admitted prosecutor. Like, it's sometimes they use like a funny word, like a judge pro tem or so. This guy was actually like, no, I'm a prosecutor. But I'm standing in for the judge today. If you have any problem, you can object. So this guy's a prosecutor, and he's saying, a different prosecutor, and the guy's like, well, yeah, I didn't understand. Someone had to explain it to me. I'd like to see the video before we start the trial, because maybe I want to change my plea. And the prosecutor was like, no, he already missed his opportunity. He can't do it. It's going to take too much time to set up the video player now because we're not prepared. And like, he was giving up every excuse. And I have to give it to the judge prosecutor for at least saying, well, how long would it take to set up the video? And the bailiff's like, well, it's already set up to play anyway, because we were going to show it in the trial. And it's like, and I'm sitting there like, yeah, he was just about to like use it in the trial anyway. Like, how can he argue that's going to take too much? So he's like, well, can we just show it to him real quick? So they show it on the TV to the whole courtroom before they even start the trial. And he's like, okay, do you want to change your plea? And he's like, yeah, okay, I guess I'm guilty. But it's like the arrogance and like the shenanigans that they're going through just to get an extra $100 out of the guy are fucking insane. And you know, I, and then I'm surprised he got that far, because realistically I fought a ticket where it was for, I was accused of driving with a suspended license. Right. And so I was arguing with the judge, who I knew wasn't a real judge. And I told him, well, do you have any proof that my license was suspended? Well, and the cop's like, yeah, well, I called it in when I pulled him over. I read the license number and they said it was suspended. And I was like, okay, well, I object to that because that's hearsay. You don't actually have anything in front of you. And there's like the whole section of cops in the background just burst into laughter. Oh, ha, 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 right? And then, of course, the judge ruled, the prosecutor ruled guilty. And, you know, long story short, like they told me I had to pay the fine. But as soon as I walked out of there, I went down and I filed an appeal, which most people wouldn't do. And this went to an actual appellate court and they overturned it. So it's like the reality is like they know they're laughing people out of court on real defenses, on real reasons that they should not have to pay a ticket. And they're just laughing them out of court because they don't know. They know that they're not going to appeal it because they don't know how to go through. And that was a big fucking process. That wasn't you just fill out a form and show up. You had to write pleadings in the right format and the right font size and all this other fucking bullshit they put you through. I don't know how many times I submitted it and I was like, okay, here, it's ready. And they're like, oh no, this is, you have to have the right heading on it. And like they change it. It's so fucking difficult if you're not a lawyer. That's how they make their money. Anyway, I'm fucking rambling now.
I got a great quick story. The guy who taught me how to work pro se, which means without a lawyer, work for yourself pro se in court, is a legal term, as your own legal advisor and you take care of your own paperwork. It goes way deeper than that with everything in capital letters and everything. But the guy who taught me all this, he got a red light camera ticket or a red light stop ticket in Itasca, Texas, back in like the 80s. And he took that red light ticket, which was probably only about $30, all the way to Supreme Court. And he lost in the Supreme Court. And he was ruled to pay this money and everything. And he sat out in the lobby after going through 2 years worth of the process, the appellate courts, all the way up. And he sat out in the lobby after he lost. And he just laughed and laughed and laughed. And the lawyers from the city came out there and they were like, well, why are you laughing? Why are you laughing? You just lost the case. And he said, I'll tell you why I'm laughing, because I just bankrupted your city, so I win. And sure enough, he bankrupted the city, and the mayor lost their job and half the city council lost their job for paying so much money to take him on that red light camera deal so they'd have the right to continue to pull people over and make money off of them. And he beat them by literally bankrupting their city. So when I get involved in different arguments and different procedures and I call these events now, because the events that we've planned, like the one that's coming up, they're now historical events. There is an open carry movement across the country because of what some of us have been involved in. There are a lot of people standing up. Politics have been changing because we're getting in the streets. And I say, let them see us in our yellow vests. Let us see it, continue to fight them on these issues, because as long as their control is in such a way that they believe what they're doing is right, they'll actually spend their way out of their own jobs, and they'll spend their way. The only problem is, are we strong enough to stand up to it as a people? And I think that the more that we get involved with different groups and we actually do these things, we're going to push them to the brink of actually wanting to do something. In which case, maybe we'll just defend our NAP. We'll defend our non-aggression principle. I like bringing attention to these things. Every time I can stick my boot up their ass, I'm going to do it.
Nice. And what's, you know, We talk about spreading awareness and growing the movement and getting other people to see that this is the right way to do things. That kind of, you know, the result of that, like, I know a lot of people are afraid of going to demonstrations and marches because they're worried police are going to show up. They're worried, like, oh, they're just going to arrest me for, like, even if I'm not doing anything illegal. Yeah, that does happen. It doesn't. Realistically, that doesn't happen as often as we see on Facebook, which is like every other day, but it does happen. But I guess my point is that ultimately, if we do this enough, you know, we're not just spreading this message to other people who are dissenting from government. The government starts to pick up on that message too. Like we've seen in our country, we've seen a lot of military vets who are against the system now because they've been through it and they see it and they understand what's going on and they know it's wrong. I know cops personally, who've quit their job because they're like, this is bullshit. We're just robbing people and we're not doing anything to protect people. And then in France, we saw in a few cases, you know, there are still police out there trying to control the riots. But in a lot of cases, and let's differentiate between the riots and the more peaceful protesting. The police have even said, okay, you know what? Some of them, not all of them, hey, these people are right. And now the police are back on the side of the people. And especially if they're, you know, still like, if they're going to be insiders and work for the government, I know they say you can't change it from the inside, but if they're going to be insiders or if they're just going to say, hey, we're going to abandon ship, now the ship's smaller. So, you know, it really is important, the work that you guys are doing, the work that everyone's doing to spread this information, because ultimately, like, yeah, they have a massive army, but once those people start waking up too, that's going to go away, and we can all start having real conversations about things and start living a little bit more peacefully.
That's exactly what I want the most out of it too. 15 years ago, when I started being an activist, I started purposely seeking out people like veterans and law enforcement and others to say, hey, what's going on is not good. You know, whether it's the illegal wars we're being involved with, or the fact that the police are militarizing. You know, I would love to go back towards the 90s or the 80s and how our people lived versus what we have today. And technology and a new year didn't change human nature, didn't change the way that we interact with one another, but the mindset of the people has. And so by going out there continuously and doing events like this, by trying to create a little bit of change in what we can, or by standing up to the city when they don't allow the homeless to eat, or when the mayor of Pittsburgh is trying to take away the firearms of the entire city and create an entire victim shooting zone like the synagogue was, but many buildings instead of one, you have to stand up and go, what the hell are you guys thinking? I mean, over and over, you guys continue to be wrong that that's where people get killed and murdered at. Over and over, it continues that your great ideas take more money out of our pockets and make our lives hard. And this isn't just something that's agreed upon by a small group of us. This is a popular uprising that's happened in America over the last 10 years. And it went from you guys are crazy and you wear tinfoil hats to, wow, the things that you guys are discussing are legitimate debates about society and about where we are coming from and where we are going to. And if it continues in the past and the things that we've been doing, we're marching ourselves right into civil war and slavery. If we go back to the principles that make us great people and the principles of freedom, the principles of rights, the principles of you know, being sons of freedom and that we're nap strong, that we don't violate other people's rights and continue this, it's a populist movement that's growing continually and continually. I think that what we've got going on now, whether it's the internet or whether it's grassroots on the streets with the kind of events that we're planning right now, this is bigger than the grassroots movement of the 50s and 60s. I think what we're doing in the freedom movement and the anti-taxation is theft movement, and across the board with all these people coming in on these like-minded ideas, I think we're finding an aspect of where we all agree that freedom is a good thing, and that what these people continue to do by controlling our lives or using government, control of the mind, is actually the wrong direction and where to go. It's just a matter of whether people wake up to it or whether they just choose their chains of slavery over their lives. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess the question is not will they wake up, it's when will we wake them up? And I think we're doing a great job. And, you know, I think a lot more people are waking up, a lot more people are working together now than, you know, when you got started. Yeah, when we got started, you know. So I think we are making some awesome strides, and I can't wait to see where this keeps going. So I think we're at about time for tonight. Are there any websites you want to plug? Is there an event page for the event on? I did see a Facebook event, I think, on the 29th.
Yeah, there's a Facebook event on the 29th called Sons of Freedom. That's the event where we're going to march the guillotine down to the courthouse in Dallas. That's just in a couple of days. That's this Saturday. So if people want to go hit that up and find out what's going on, a lot of times when people drive in from all over the place, it's don'tcomply.com. where we post a lot of our stories and talk about things we believe in. One of our great writers, Andre Esparza over there, does some great stuff all the time. We also have another group that is rising up in Pittsburgh right now because the mayor is getting ready to outlaw firearms in the city. And so there's a group that goes up and said, we're not going to comply like the guys in Texas are doing. And I've been kind of helping advise on some of the things they're doing, but they're taking off on their own little group. And they're going to be doing an open carry event on the 7th of January and getting lots of people involved. It's getting a lot of media attention. And it's kind of hitting the same type of things that we've had to deal with in Texas. And so we've got a few advisors helping those people and do their own event. This is their event. So there's other states and other cities being reached by this message. And again, you know, I just want everybody to understand that you as an individual are important and carry your own talents. You're not a collective. You're an individual with individual rights. And knowing that, you can actually change the system more from what you believe in and working with your hands. And I hope that what you do is with freedom.
Awesome. Sounds great. All right. Well, I'm going to post this video on YouTube, and we're going to add all the links and make sure that they're in the comments or in the description. And it's been great having you on, and good luck with the event. And we'll see you soon.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time.
All right.
Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads!